Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Scared as always. Today we're going to be doing our 2019 recap, discussing some of our favorites for the year, and of course reviewing our stats. Yeah, so any comments for the year before we jump in?
I've had fun making the podcast.
It's a fun excuse to play games, so.
Yeah, exactly.
I figured we'll just go through sort of our categories and talk about some of our favorites. So were there any standout themes for games that we played? And it's not just limited to the podcast, but we'll say games we played for the year. Kiwi, any themes?
So when I wrote down the answer to this question, I just wrote standout games, but I think the themes work still. So
you read as well as you listen.
Yeah, well, I read as well as you guys listen.
Oh, hold on.
Did you take notes, BP? Were you prepared?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just going. All right, we'll see how this goes.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I wrote stuff down so that I could sound more professional.
No, I just wrote down all the categories and didn't think of answers. So I was going to make it up on the fly.
Nice.
Oh, okay.
Well, I couldn't remember all the games we'd play, so.
Oh, I can't do that either. All right. Well, how Kiwi, like, what you got?
Okay. So I did it as standout games, like I said, but I think the themes still work. So for standout games on the podcast, I wrote Wingspan and Call to Adventure. And I think that the theme bit still works for Wingspan because it's a super unique theme that, you know, we haven't really seen anywhere else. And then Call to Adventure, we played the regular, but then BP and I played the King Killer, the Name of the Wind expansion. Right. And it was super cool, like adding in stuff that, you know, we had read in the books.
Yep.
So that was a lot of fun. And then off the podcast, I wrote Kitchen Rush.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one.
And then Magic Maze, which Eric, the three of us still need to play that for sure. But I really enjoyed Magic Maze. And then Raiders of the North Sea, which Paxton also really enjoys. I enjoy the theme, and it doesn't really have Vikings with horns in their helmet, so I appreciate that from a historical standpoint.
So now from a theme sort of general thing, do you think Vikings are overdone?
I don't think Vikings are overdone. I mean, the medieval type, you know, more ancient stuff, I think, is overdone, but I don't think I've seen a lot. Like, Vikings usually end up, like, not necessarily as, like, the main theme. They usually end up as, like, hey, here's this dudes on a map game, and oh, by the way, like, there's a clan or a group or a team that's got, like, harkens to Vikings.
There's been a lot, because you've got Raiders of the North Sea, Champions of Midgard, Feast for Odin. I think there's a few centralized Viking ones. Maybe we just haven't played a lot of them.
Yeah, but I mean, when you compare it to like zombies,
yeah,
and
yeah,
space,
I was just like,
there's
curious
definitely
if
more
thought,
themes.
I mean,
no,
we like,
I don't think so.
We like Vikings, so I don't think they can be overdone for us.
Yeah, I mean, Odin owns you, so yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I, as a medievalist, I don't feel like the medieval theme, if done well, is overdone. That might be the thing, is if I done well.
That's always the tricky part.
Yeah, in thinking about that and thinking about some of those historical themed games, I mean, Fall of Rome, thinking of ones we've played this year, the pandemic Fall of Rome, I felt like was also very well done with its theme.
Yep.
I mean, as we were just talking about kind of that historical, but also like the fantasy realm one, I think when we get to some of the other categories that I feel more prepared for, that integrate some of the artwork, those are ones that really stood out for me. But I think kind of not to be the Debbie Downer so early on in the podcast, but themes that do stand out that on the kind of negative scale, again, just the whole space theme, as we know, I'm just not very into it. Some of them came up on my surprise list for, even though they were space themed, working out well. But I think by and large, those are games that I will...
Not into the space.
Yeah, just keep moving down on the shelf to go find ones that are, again, more historical themed. I think, again, thinking about some of the themes we've also looked at and thinking about art and disappointment versus standing out, some of the nature done ones have been like hit or miss too. So Wingspan, yeah, I think, is the exception. And that, I think,
Bosque.
I mean, obviously it was, yeah, Bosque. But Wingspan being Nishbildishyara, obviously. I mean, everybody recognized that that was very unique in both mechanics, its theme, and its artwork. So
yeah, I should have thrown out Bargain Quest as well. I thought, you know, they took a theme and kind of reversed it where, you know, you're not the adventurer. You're the guy selling stuff to the adventurer.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when it's like a different take on kind of a common theme. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think more and more it's necessary for game designers to be thinking outside of the box. Okay. For themes like that, because I think as more and more people are getting into gameplay and more people are spending more and more time and energy in it, that they are starting to, you know, kind of up their game.
Nope.
Okay, you're off the podcast. Yeah. You're fired. You're off the podcast.
Right. So like they want and it's starting to expect more, right? In a theme and in the mechanics and in the art and kind of the overall playability. I mean, life is just not going to cut it anymore. Although I still
life is not going to cut it.
life is still on our shelf. I'll just also state that.
We went from puns to real deep philosophy.
Yeah, I'll just throw in a couple ones that kind of maybe surprised me, which is Grand Austria Hotel. That was a surprisingly like fun little theme that we played. And the networks, which I didn't think I'd really like because it was kind of a corporate-y theme, but I think it came off really like in a fun way and was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking with the Kitchen Rush and Grand Austria, you know, those kind of have the same theme of filling orders and just one's more cooperative than the other. But
yeah. Well, I think theme wise, too, one is a bit more like rushing around a kitchen versus like giving an experience to your patrons kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So true.
Slight difference, but yeah, similar. What game had your favorite artwork, BP?
I could not come up with one game. So there is a list. And then when Wingspan was brought up, I'll have to add that. But I think some ones that surprised me with the art. So like Wingspan, Call to Adventure, I think the art, especially like Call to Adventure and thinking about the cards and how well done they were, I don't think those are like surprises. But ones that kind of surprised me because maybe I just hadn't looked into the games before we played them were like Everdell. That's the one right where...
The tree. It was like
the 3D. And then the tree. And then each of the cards was just really well put together. The same with Mysterium. I mean, I think it should have good art, but it's not like art that's like super fantastic where you're going to go put it up on your wall like the, you know, the Bat Historian, which don't worry, Christmas is around the corner if you guys need to figure out a Christmas gift. But I think it still kind of had that great you want to look at and you want to keep going back to kind of feel to it. But then I couldn't like make up my mind because Bosque is also, especially with all of the components, I think really well put together, if not like on the same level as like Wingspan. I think Magic Maze has that same like detail in the cart, like in the board, like the tiles. If you don't like the first couple of times I played it, I didn't realize it. And then the last couple of times I realized like each of the little rooms has like little things going on in them. So I think, you know, those are just some that are overlooked. But other ones that stand out, that Painter's Workshop game or whatever that Eric and I played at Gen Con. I don't remember the name of it.
AEG's Atelier.
Yes. Atelier. Obviously, right. The theme of it being the Painter's Workshop, but the fact that the designers and the AEG went out and got the rights to be able to print actual classical masterpieces, to me just spoke to a level of dedication to having the whole theme and artwork kind of come together. And then the last one that's on my list, sorry, I told you it was
big. It's the art section. Go nuts.
It is. It's the art section. It is my largest section. Is that Paris game that also Eric and I played just again. Ooh,
I forgot about that one. That was a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Like all the components were really well, but like the fact that the thing that I remember the most is it had those like postcards as part of the components. And they really looked like postcards, and they had that kind of turn of the century, art done to it, which is just one of the kind of more famous Parisian art styles to it, too. So, yeah, was really hard to come up with one.
The ones that have been integrating like the art and components together like that, I think it's not just art printed on a card or art printed on a box, but it's like, you know, different ways to present it, I think has been pretty cool.
Which I think, like, you know, if you think about it, the Basque, that Paris game, and Wingspan all really do, because all of the components to them, you know, are just really well put together.
And also ones that, like, a map or whatever, they put in a lot of good detail on, like you're saying with Magic Maze, where there's all these tiny little things that are built into the actual game board instead of what did we play? That was The Captain is Dead, where it's just like the playing board was just this like colored map and there wasn't really any detail to it. So I think that's like when the art is more integrated into the game, too, has been cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kiwi, your favorite art?
So I think a lot of them have already been mentioned. I think the only one is off the podcast, Raccoon Tycoon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoy the art for Raccoon Tycoon.
Was 2018.
Yeah, I don't know that we played that this year.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's true.
Good try.
Yeah.
I mean, we probably played it this year, but not as a first round game. It is one that we reference often as a high point for art.
And then for me, I'll add in in general Red Raven games. I can't remember if we played any. Rome is the newest one I haven't played yet, but I just love that art. His art style is kind of one of my favorite. Then
screw you guys, we did play Raccoon Tycoon this year.
When?
January 20th. All right, sorry, back there.
It's a good thing you have that app.
Yeah, it's a good thing I log everything.
Yeah, I'll throw in the Grizzled as probably my favorite art. That was really cool, sort of, you know, early 20th century cartoony kind of style. Mm-hmm. So that was probably my favorite kind of new art style of the year.
I think we talked a lot about that theme as well.
Yeah, that's a unique theme and art. It just, that all really came together pretty well, I thought. Which I think is also a good way to say, like, you know, it was as a pretty simple card game, right? There wasn't too much to it.
Yeah, no.
Like, it still came off really cool. I feel like a lot of the kind of those small, like, what do they call them? Like, not my
wallet games.
Yeah, like wallet games. Sometimes the art is kind of just tacked on. It's not very, like, they didn't put a lot of thought into it or make it a big deal, but I think it could. And I think
that's true.
Grizzled showed that. Favorite mechanic of the year, either something you've never played or a unique twist on a mechanic. Kiwi.
So obviously I can't say worker placement because that's obviously my favorite mechanic. but I think of the games that we've played this year, I think the storytelling mechanic or role play, I think it actually says role play on BGG. But so looking at Sheriff of Nottingham, you know, we really got into the role, and BP and I played it again with Paxton and her cousin over Thanksgiving, and we still like went straight to the role play, even though, you know, the rule book doesn't say anything about it. It just, you know, I feel like we naturally go towards the role play, and then the storytelling coming from Call to Adventure and Galactic Scoundrels. I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. And although we didn't do it when we played the Grizzled, you know, the rule book talks about, you know, you can. Oh, no, the rule book doesn't talk about it. It was Rodney on Watch It Played talked about, you know, you can role play or storytell with the Grizzled as well. And I think if we played it again, I would definitely do that.
Yeah,
I feel like I really enjoyed the games where we got to tell stories.
BP, your favorite mechanic.
I mean, obviously, my favorite all around is cooperative. I think I also tend to get into the storytelling, so I don't want to repeat everything that Kiwi just said. But I think what stood out to me for the year as a whole were games that like mixed up right? And had different phases that had different mechanics attached to them. I'm thinking like Bosque in particular. Yeah. There were some other ones that we did that. But I think that just, it kind of has the ability to appeal to all types of players so that like you don't like, for instance, I remember that game has area control. Like you don't have to worry. That's just one season. And in the next season, you're going to be focusing on doing something else. I think also like one of the reasons we're all attracted to games is it helps like work different components of our brain. And I think by having just one game that works all of these different mechanics, it works all of these different functions in our brains. And so I think that's just attracted to us.
Yep. Paris was another naturally. One that did that because you had the tile first, placement and then the Tetris-y thing. So,
Yeah. So there you go. That's my breakthrough on mechanics.
Yeah. You said a couple on that.
Thanks. more than I got.
Better record that.
Eric will cut it, but we recorded it.
I think my favorite kind of mechanic, I don't know if we'd played much of it before, but push your luck. I think we really kind of found those were really fun. I think we've enjoyed kind of everyone that push your luck and then kind of real time, which real time tends to have some push your luck elements in it because you're really, you know, trying to go all out. But I think that's true. Games with those mechanics have been kind of the highlight of the year. So, what game was the most fun to teach, Kiwi?
So I have two answers here. One that's kind of bullshit, and then the other one is the actual answer.
Wow.
So my bullshit answer is Mysterium, because I didn't have to teach anything.
Yeah.
I think the real answer is actually the Grizzled, because I felt like the mechanics went so well with the theme that it was just easier to teach.
Okay, yeah.
And I felt like that was the easiest one for me to teach. We picked it up fast. I felt like, so that's the one I had the most enjoyment teaching.
Okay. And BP, what was the most painful to learn?
Let's see. That one at Gen Con that was a Crown of Whatever.
Ooh, yeah. Oh,
Crown of Amara.
Crown of Amara.
I mean, yeah, we were about, I don't know if it was his... obviously not Kiwi, it was someone else, just like the monotone, the detail, and that we were just
exhausted.
Like, yeah, we were about ready to get up like 10 minutes into his explanation, which of course the explanation went on for almost 30. So it was really, really long and detailed. I know we got into the game afterwards, but I just feel like,
That was a struggle.
That was hard.
That was a struggle.
Heaven and Ale was another one that was...
still haven't learned how to play it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And then the last one I put down a question mark on this one was Arboretum. Mm-hmm. Just because I feel like, you know, we played through it and we still didn't quite understand what the whole point was.
Yeah, I think Arboretum and Heaven and Ale were the two that at the end of the game I still didn't know how to play them.
Yeah.
So I wrote down an answer for me for most painful to teach.
Ooh, okay.
And Heaven and Ale was the one that I wrote down as most painful to teach.
Yeah.
And I attributed it to it was a game that we sort of learned on the go. So like I didn't get a chance to read the rules beforehand.
True. But we've done quite a few like that and they haven't been that painful.
Yeah. And that's why I wrote in a second point, which was it probably also didn't help that the game wasn't very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Where other games where we've done that, the games have been better. And so it makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
To learn on the go. This one was just, it was a learn on the go and it wasn't that great.
Yeah, I agree. What game do we wish we left on the shelf? And I'll take that one. I'm going to go with Arboretum. Like you said, like we just said, it was painful to learn. Never really got it. It wasn't fun. Like I felt like there wasn't much decision making to do, even though it seems like it comes off like it should. I just picked two categories and played trees until I ended up with trees. And then it ended and we calculated points that I still didn't understand how we figured that out. It was just a waste of time, in my opinion.
But you won. How can you hate it?
It's pretty easily. I feel like that's actually kind of common. Anyone you wish we had left on the shelf?
I have a couple to add to
that. Okay.
Go for it.
Biblios.
Yep. That was my other option.
And then Heaven and Ale. I think we're all coming back.
Right. Ooh, yeah. And especially Heaven and Ale because we were at a convention with a big game library and there were like four or five on the shelf that we kind of had been looking at and wanted to play. And so that one was kind of a
Yeah. So I also wrote down Biblios, but the game that I will add to the list is Skull. Skull,
yeah. Those are our big three. I will say at least though, like Skull took 10 minutes. So
yeah,
it was like, all right, well, that was whatever, as opposed to Biblios and Arboretum, which took a little or longer. I mean, at least it wasn't, Heaven and Ale may be the worst because that was a lengthy game. I think that took us
tons of setup.
2.5 hours or so. And losing that much time is a real hit.
Yeah.
Especially like when you're at a convention and there's so many things you could be doing. What game had the best player interaction, BP?
Well, when Kiwi brought up Kitchen Rush, but I did not have that on my list. Obviously, that is one. But I have another list. I had a really hard time finding just one.
Okay.
But Bosque, because obviously, right, you're trying to keep in touch with everybody else. I think Sheriff of Nottingham might even be above that one. And it is like after playing it this last, holiday again, it's so much fun. We were laughing so hard and having such a good time playing it yet again. And the other one, the other three actually that I put on just to go through them real quickly are Magic Maze, which we still need to get Eric to play. Yep. Mysterium, which, I mean, is kind of competitive and cooperative at the same time. And then Sushi Roll, because I saw it on the list and was like, oh, yeah, Sushi Roll is such a great, you're passing your thing to everybody. So, I mean, there is at least some player interaction there. So,
yep.
I wrote down, I had just Sheriff of Nottingham. I mean, we had a bunch of good games that had good player interaction, but I felt like Sheriff of Nottingham, like, we were pretty much laughing the entire time we were playing.
Yep, and I think Sheriff of Nottingham would be my choice for best. And I think what makes it strong as, like, a social deduction game, like, it gets passed around, so everybody gets a chance to be the sheriff, and everybody gets the chance to be the liars. And so, as opposed to like a lot of social deduction games, because I played like The Resistance and Coup and things like that, where like, there's the one traitor or hidden role and everyone's trying to figure it out versus. So like, I like that everyone gets to kind of like have a chance to do it. And it's not like secretive, but you're still doing some deduction and lying and bluffing and all that stuff. So I think that's why it's so good at the interaction.
We agree. Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yeah, we agree.
A Camel Cup I'm going to throw in is another one that had good player interaction.
True.
I can't really remember the specifics. I just remember it was funny. We were laughing. We were all like competitive. We were all cheering for camels. It was just lively. It was fun.
Camel Cup was one that I considered putting on there, but I went with Sheriff of Nottingham.
As the best, Sheriff of Nottingham, but there were some other good ones out there. All the real-time ones are always just fun for us because we like to yell at each other. Best history tie-in, Kiwi.
So I have two. So the first one I wrote was Camel Cup, mostly because it spawned the camels in Arizona.
Okay.
And the podcasting camel. And then my other favorite one was the Grand Austria Hotel, because I felt like it wasn't just BP doing history. I felt like we all got to add a little piece of it.
Yep.
So that one involved all of us. So those were my two favorites.
And how we went more off topic on the history section because Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, yeah. True.
Is an Austrian. Yeah.
Famous Austrians, we know. Then we
had to look up a bunch of facts about Conan the Barbarian. Well, I did.
AKA Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
BP, your favorite history, and try to keep it short.
I did not prepare a section since it had Kiwi's name next to it. But I mean, I would agree with those that Kiwi did, just again, Camel Cup spawning the, spontaneousness of how my brain works in when anything comes up and I'm like, there were camels in Arizona. I'm not going to say it like Kiwi says it, though. Says it all.
Say it like, that's literally how you just said it.
Yeah, you're fine. You nailed it.
I would say, though, Biblios, because I got to totally nerd out about monks and libraries and
you're very excited for that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add. I think the Grand Austrian Hotel and the Grizzled was a good sort of combined history. And then,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think that was probably the best. All right. So now we'll pause before our final categories for some statistical analysis of our year of gaming. So Kiwi, take it away.
All right. So overall, we played or talked about playing 36 different games on the podcast. And that includes the bonus episodes that BP and I did, and the most recent episodes that had Kiwi, that's me, had myself, BP, and Paxton. But in order to make the comparisons between the three of us fair, I only included games that the three of us played. So that leaves 27 games that the three of us all played. So generally speaking, you need at least 32 observations in a data set. And in reality, we need like hundreds to actually like create anything that's predictive.
Are you just like nerding out right now getting to talk about
I am 100%
data analytics? Excellent.
Yeah. So maybe next year when we include this data and next year's data, we might be able to create like a predictive model just so like whether somebody will enjoy a game or whether they'll win. So didn't get to do anything like that. But so of the 27 games, so excluding co-op games, Eric won 10 games. I won 9 games and BP won 4 games.
So our common joke of Kiwi winning everything
is incorrect and patently false, just as I said every time you guys brought it up.
To be
pretty
fair,
close though.
Of all the games I didn't play that he excluded, he probably won all those.
I think I won one.
Yeah, no, BP won some of them.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I do. I think the generalness of how I normally do lose is pretty safe to say.
I think that one is an accurate assumption we had made.
Yeah. So the interesting part is that when each of us wins, we tend to do twice as well as we normally do in terms of score. But that when BP wins, Eric and I tend to score our absolute worst.
So it makes it seem like I actually spank you guys, like skunk you.
Right. It's also that you maybe won because we played so terribly.
Yes.
Hey.
I'm just reading the data.
Hey now.
Just reading
hey
the
now.
Data.
That's what the data says. Eric tends to win more complex games, and I tend to win less complex games.
I wonder what that says.
Yeah. Mechanics wise,
you have to finish that my average is just slightly higher than yours on complexity.
It's only slightly higher, so I didn't want to say numbers, but if we have to 2.018 repeating, of course, is mine, and then BP's is the average complexity is 2.035 and Eric's is 2.263, so that'll be the last time I say numbers.
okay.
Top mechanics in our games, hand management was actually the number one, followed by card drafting and set collection. Those were in the top five of our mechanics. So we clearly played a lot of games that involved cards.
I think that's common.
Yeah. So I also looked at the Would You Play It Again? And I saw that Eric is actually the most likely to say that he would not play a game again.
That's not surprising.
Yeah.
So of the 27 games we played, Eric would not play 9 of them. BP wouldn't play 7
that's
of them again.
Still a pretty good amount, though, that I would play again.
Yeah, that's like a third.
And I will basically play anything again. As I said, there were only 5 games that I wouldn't play again.
The 5 that you wouldn't was probably peer pressure, too, because you'd probably play any game again, except for maybe
Skull. That's probably true, yeah. Generally speaking, like whether or not we would play a game again or not, for you guys, it didn't really matter what the game's rating was. For me, it tended like the lower rated games were the ones that I tended to not play again. But you guys were kind of all over the place. Like, so the BGG ratings really don't work for you guys.
Yeah, I think that's fair because there were a couple kind of big name games that I think we did not get into.
I'm curious, are some of the ones, because I've tended to sometimes notice Eric and I do have some similarities in games that we are interested in. Is there any, like, I don't know your analytical talk, but are some of the many ones the same that Eric and I had said we wouldn't play?
That's true.
So I didn't want to like point to visuals for the podcast since it's an audio medium.
Yep.
Yeah, but we have Instagram. Guys, we can.
Yeah, I was going to post the graphs and stuff. But if you guys look at the figures, so I'm on page. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody on the podcast could turn to page 7.
Everybody on the podcast. So if you look at the collective play again. So everything that's red, we all said no to.
Right. Okay. I think we green,
if
we all said
orange,
yes.
If it's orange, you guys said no to, and I said yes. If it's yellow, Eric was the only one that said no.
So I.
And if it's green, we all said yes. Yeah. So orange was you guys. So Dale of Merchants and Plank and Space.
Yeah.
And then Heaven and Ale,
yeah,
which I said I would play again.
Sucker, still, you can go play it without us.
Yeah. Now, I would be curious to know, like, going back to mechanics, are there certain mechanics that we're more interested in?
Like, see, and yeah,
you probably need more data.
Where we need more data.
I need a little bit more data. Right. So that's what I want to do. Like, you know, if a game has these mechanics, you know, is Eric more likely to want to play it again?
Right.
But I need more observations, basically, to be able to make a model like that.
Yep.
So what you're seeing is we have to play more games.
Play more
so
games.
You can nerd out on data.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I'm fine with this.
Yep.
Our average BGG game, or like rating, so across the 27 was 7.45. The lowest that we played was 6.8, and that was Forbidden Island, which we all said
was
we would
good
play
game,
again.
Yeah.
Yep. And the highest was 8.1, which was Wingspan. And then I tried to look at to see if, you know, maybe complexity had a difference between our play times. So generally speaking, we take about 13 minutes longer on average than what is posted on the box or Board Game Geek. And that actually goes up to 16 minutes when we played on Tabletop Simulator and down to 9 minutes when we play it live.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, but generally speaking, we tend to take longer.
But we are playing them for the first time usually.
Correct.
Yeah. Also, I do want to point out that one of us is very Tabletop Simulator handicapped.
Yeah. Well, I think generally speaking.
Challenged.
Yeah.
Things do take longer on Tabletop Simulator as well.
Yeah.
There are things that it speeds up, but I think overall there are things that slow it down to the point where it negates what gets sped up by doing it on a computer-based program.
Yeah. I also think, like, just in general, like, the flow isn't as good because people, it's harder to stay, like, engaged with the group. It's like you're not necessarily paying attention to other people's turns, so you're not ready to jump on your turn because you don't have all, like, the visual cues. But
yeah. And then this is the one place where I tried to create a model, it was a predictive model to try and figure out how long it would take us to play a game.
Is that what the lines indicate?
Yeah, that's what the two lines are. So there's an orange line. That means we played it live. And the blue line is Tabletop Simulator. But we need a lot more values. So the model that I created, it's better than no model, but isn't good enough to actually be useful, essentially, is what the data says. So I need more data points to create a useful model. So we just have to play more games. Yep.
Next year.
I'm glad your degree is coming in handy.
Yeah, no, this is 100% what I did. This is why I got a master's. All right. And then the last thing I did was, since we had scores that were kind of spread all over the place in terms of scale. So like, you know, Galactic Scoundrels, I think the top score was like 260 something. And then I had I needed a way to compare them. So I created adjusted scores to try and put the scores on the same scale. And then also what I did was I went into Board Game Geek and I got the scores for 50 other games to try and create a normalization to see how well we did with other gamers. So I put it on a scale of 0 to 10, where 0 would have been the lowest score amongst all of the data points that I gathered, and 10 is the highest. Created that way. So a score of 5 would indicate that you are close to the BGG average. And then closer to 0, the minimum score, and closer to 10 is the maximum score.
Okay.
So we all score lower than Board Game Geek average.
Sounds about right.
But I tend to score closer to the average at 4.5. Eric's at 4.1, and then BP's around 3. And then I noticed that we had two games that were skewing the data, and it was Dale of Merchants and My Little Scythe, because the scores people were keeping there. If you remember from My Little Scythe, the winner was the first to get the 4 prizes, you know, put down trophy, their 4 score markers, their trophies. And then Dale of Merchants, it was the person who created the 8th. So the winner always had 8. So there were a bunch of 8s in the data set. And then since I won, now I had a 10, and that was skewing my data. And Eric won My Little Scythe, and so that was skewing his data.
So that the filtered column?
Yeah, so that's the filtered column. So Eric's goes down to 3.9, I go down to 4.3, and BP goes down to 2.8. Now, Paxton actually goes up, but he also only has 7 data points. Mm. So he goes from a 3.1 to a 3.4. So generally speaking, we do worse than other gamers.
Though, to be fair, they're probably recording like multiple plays, whereas, it's our first play. Yeah. Also, we suck. So, I mean, there's that.
Yeah, there's that. And I think the type of people who record the scores.
Yeah.
I also tried to spread it out. So like there were definitely people that had like 30 something plays of a game. Mm. I didn't want to take all of theirs because clearly those people are good at the game.
Yeah. Right.
So I tried to spread the scores that I took across many different players to try and get a better snapshot of like what an average score for that game was. Yeah. So that is all the data. Eric wins. I tend to score more points. Eric won't play games again. And when I BP lose wins, most often. Yeah, when BP wins, Eric, it's probably because Eric and I do worse.
You just to win, you just got to score more points than the other players.
Yep. That's what John Madden says.
Generally how you win. And the whole result is we must play more games.
We must play more games because I need to make more data. I need more data.
Excellent. Looking forward to 2020 and more games.
That's our takeaway. All of that. Your master's degree told us we just need to play more games.
Yep. Money well spent.
All right. So our final questions, the biggest surprise.
Sheriff of Nottingham.
That's what I had too.
Yeah, I wasn't sure we were going to like it, especially after playing Skull, going into another like social deduction bluffing game. And then it very much surprised us.
Anything to add, BP?
Yeah, so I had multiple ones.
Yeah.
I think it was The Captain is Dead was surprisingly fun, even how bland I think it came across. And it was in that series of like space themed things. So for me, it was kind of surprising because it was a space themed game that maybe because it was cooperative that I went ahead and I found actually kind of enjoyable.
OK, yeah, that's a fair one. Pick something different for me. I'll say For Sale. Just because it was an older game from the 90s that was like, you know, the theme, the real estate thing was kind of meh. You know, I didn't know that I'd be that into it, but then it was super fun. That was another one we just kind of like laughed and made jokes all the time and didn't take serious. And it was fun.
It is in the quiver, by the way.
I made it to the quiver.
Yeah, they made it to the quiver.
All right. And so the kid has also played it and enjoyed it.
Yep. Yeah,
I think of the games on the list, it is the only one that I don't know if I immediately bought it, but it was within a couple of days. Yeah. Although I have others on the list that if I saw it and I had money on me, I would probably. So the Grizzled would be another one. Yeah. Where if I saw it, I would probably purchase it.
Yep. All right. The biggest disappointment.
Can I go first? Biblios.
Yeah. For you. Yeah.
You knew that was going to be. Yeah.
Libraries, yep. Monks.
I know.
Yeah. What isn't there to love? And then suddenly right. the rules come in and it's just like, meh.
Well, even I think when we had talked about the game, even the mechanics and everything should have, I feel like, played a lot differently. And then just nothing came together as a theme, mechanics, or all of it.
Yeah. Yep. Kiwi, biggest disappointment?
Mine is Clank in Space.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, so many people talked about how it's such a great game. I mean, at least with Biblios, like listening to other podcasts, it's like, you know, only one of the three people on Board Game Barrage enjoys it. So I was like, this game could be whatever. I just felt like with Clank in Space, like everybody was like, oh, Clank is such a great game. Clank in Space is such a great game. And then we played it and I was just kind of like, I hope Clank is better, but we'll see.
Yeah. And then not to pile on Skull, I'm going to go with Seven Wonders Duel. This is okay. One I still yeah. constantly see on, like, you know, lists of games you should play or games you should get. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's still popular. I liked Seven Wonders okay. You know, I like kind of the whole civilization building sort of theme. So that game is just a real disappointment the way it sort of, I don't know, just didn't flow very well and wasn't fun.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, our game, I won with the military, but you actually had more points.
Yeah, but I didn't realize I had more points. While playing, I thought I was doing terrible.
Yeah.
And then I had points that I didn't even know, and then but it didn't matter because you insta-won because of military, which was all randomness due to card draw. So,
yep.
Yeah, just sort of a real kind of disappointment on that one. All right, favorite game we featured on the podcast this year?
Yeah, so I'm going with Call to Adventure.
Mm. Okay.
Is probably my favorite. And I had a second one, but I wasn't sure. Like, BP and I only talked about it in our Kansas City Shuffle episode.
We'll count it.
Okay. Magic Maze would be a very close second.
BP?
I mean, I would go. So I took this question in two different ways. So. The favorite game, I think, would still be Sheriff of Nottingham. I think that when the three of us played it, we had just a lot of fun. That and Camel Cup, I think, both were just like thinking about how much fun we had playing it and how much laughing we had done while playing it.
Mm-hmm.
But re-listening and thinking about this question, and not just like the games, but also I kind of took it as favorite podcasts in listening.
Okay. Yeah. That works too.
Yeah. To us, would be a tie with Biblios, just because I think I dug into Kiwi a little bit on that episode. So there were some great outtakes. But of course the Grand Austria Grizzled, because I think all of us just, had a lot to say, before and after all of those games. But I just remember on Biblios, like, laughing out loud. And I can't remember if it was that one or the Grand Austria, just like walking into work and just being like, oh my gosh, I was just laughing at my own podcast like the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I don't know if anyone else out there is listening to us and laughs, but I am enjoying our podcast.
Yeah. That's all that matters. Yeah. I'll say I was also kind of influenced the same way of like what was our actual best podcast, because I kept thinking Grand Austria Hotel the Grizzled, even though they weren't my favorite games, but just because the episodes were so fun, they seemed to make the list. As a favorite game, I'm gonna go with Camel Cup on this one, just for how much fun we had playing it and the ridiculousness, and we didn't know what we were getting into on that one. That also kind of comes along with surprise too, that we're I don't know that we expected, but it wasn't that. So yeah, that was another just fun one. So all right, and then the final question of the favorite game played this year, Kiwi.
I'm going with Kitchen Rush.
Okay. That's
interesting.
A good choice.
I think it's a great board game version of Overcooked, which the three of us really enjoy as well. I enjoy the chaos and the cooperativeness, and I think it just kind of fits into a niche that we all really like playing. And other than setup time, because it does take a little bit to get everything out to where it needs to go, it's a super fast game. I mean, it's 3 rounds of 4 minutes, and that's it. It's just those 12 minutes are the most hectic ever.
And you're yelling at each other the whole time.
Yep. Just like an Overcooked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is a game that like we played once and we're like, we got to play this again. And we played it like 5 times in a row.
Yep.
And like, we just could not stop playing it.
Yeah. And then that weekend we played it like 4 times in a row. And then you left to go home and BP and I played it like 2 more times after you left. Yep. So,
and then once we introduced Paxton to it, it's also one of his top requested games as well.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think we played it like 3 times with him.
I am going to go with kind of another cooperative as well. And Magic Maze. As much as we keep talking about Sheriff of Nottingham, so it was really hard, but I just remember how much I always love Magic Maze. And I think because it hits many of the things I've just brought up along this podcast, where it's got that really kind of art that you don't at first notice and that you get into. It's cooperative, so it's my favorite mechanic. But it adds in different stages as you keep playing. So the first time round seems like easy peasy, and then you keep adding into it, you know, like you can't communicate. And just, I don't know, just the replayability of it, the cooperativeness, and just how it, you know, just keeps changing for you and intriguing your interest. So it seems like something that, at least for now, it will not grow old.
Yeah. So for me, I haven't played Ecos yet. It's sitting on the table. So that might take it, depending, because our little demo of it was really good. But I'm going to go with Fire in the Library.
Oh, yeah.
So that was one that this also kind of went with surprise.
Because that's a press your luck.
Yeah. So it kind of went with surprise, too, because like, I mostly bought it because it was Tony Miller and he's a nice guy and I wanted to buy his game. But then when we played it, I was like, this is really good. And then I haven't played it too much, played it a few times, but it's one that I keep wanting to get back and play again. And it's just been fun. It's push your luck. That's fun. It's kind of short and light, but there's a lot to it. People seem to get into it. It's fun. Everyone's like kind of cheering each other on and or, you know, whatever the reverse of you're cheering them to fail. So I don't know. It's just been a really good game. So I think that's my favorite of the year.
Oh, cool. So if you have any recommendations for games for us to play in 2020 or any thoughts or comments about your biggest surprises or biggest disappointments or best art in games for 2019, please let us know. Hit us up on the Twitter at First Turn Cast or Instagram as well. And we look forward to hearing from you, and happy and safe holidays. Oh, and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe.
He's been looking forward to this for so long.
Yeah, we literally got to my one part. The one thing I bring to this podcast, I could finally use my master's degree. This is the reason why I got it.
Yeah.
So I could do board game analysis.